Hello, you're with Truth News. It's 16th of December, 2009. I'm Hereward Fenton, and I'll be your host for tonight. And I'm joined by telephone with Josh Jackson. Welcome to the show, Josh.
G'day, Hereward. Another lovely week of exciting news to deliver to the Truth News audience.
We do. We've got quite a lot of it. It's been stacking up. We've had a lot to do, you know, as we always do, have a lot to do to try and just maintain our focus. You know, that's the hardest thing, isn't it? Maintaining the focus.
There's so much to talk about that, you know, sometimes, like I said it to you today, you know, we knock down a few zombies and they just, there's like a whole, like you said, you know, it's just like a, you shoot them down and they keep walking at you and it's like...
Yeah, you keep taking them out, they keep coming.
You get up on a ladder and you see that there's 14 trillion of them coming towards you.
That can be a little demoralizing, I have to say.
Oh, so that's what it feels like. It's just, like, you know, when you take all these different issues, you know. Like, wow. But what you do is you just focus on one.
Well, my pledge is to just keep on taking out the zombies, okay?
Yeah.
One shot to the head and they're done, okay? And I don't care.
One info shot.
One solid bullet of information to the brain and the zombie is no longer a threat.
Yeah.
And that is literally true.
Well, I mean, look at what Lord Monckton, Christopher Monckton, when he did a campaign, we'll probably play this today on this show, but he debated a Greenpeace activist, and by the end of it, she was turned, I think. She wanted to go and look into it and find out more, and she was quite happy to hear the information that he had to give. She was, like, relieved. She was like, wow, that's such good news that the planet's been cooling since 98. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, she was neutralized by his information. Yeah, the info bullet. So there's going to be quite a few info bullets being fired tonight.
Yeah.
So get ready.
Load them up.
We're loading up
the info cannon.
Yeah, we're loading it up right now. And get ready, because here it comes. Okay, we're going to start tonight. I'm going to work from the trivial through to the totally insane, okay?
Great.
We're going to start with a story which you'd be justified in calling trivial, but I think it's instructive and it's important. The title of the story, as I've kind of rewritten it on the Twitter feed, is "Moronic Sunscreen Jingle to be Played on the Hour to Beachgoers Using Council Loudspeakers." This is really happening, folks. They're using the infrastructure that was set up to warn people about, you know, serious threats, including shark attacks, to give you a jingle. It's been specially composed by Ben Lee. Its message, "Be Sun Sound," aims to remind beachgoers to reapply sunscreen and be conscious of the amount of time they're spending outdoors during peak UV hours. It will be played on the hour between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. and less often outside of those times.
See, folks.
Yes.
Just to interject there.
Yeah.
It all sounds like, that's good. You know, that's reasonable, you know, because we need to, you know, we need to remember and it's good. But there's two things here that we have to think about. It's an issue of where people actually start, it's a conditioning method. It's a conditioning method to get you used to having loudspeakers barking sort of reminders and stuff at you. Now, the other side of it is it's also a conditioning method to make you conditioned that the state is a father figure or some sort of parent figure that has to remind you to do simple menial things like put on sunscreen. Now, we all know that the sun is damaging. we all know these things and we do need reminders, but that's what friend and family are there for. That's what you have to be smart. And if you're not smart, you're going to end up with a tumor and die. So yeah. That's your own problem and your own fault. It's ridiculous to have these sort of speech. And this is the thing. So it's a conditioning method. Some people say, well, you know, you need reminders. Well, okay, you do. But get your friend or remind yourself and be a bit more self-reliant. Take responsibility for yourself. And this is the message of Truth News a lot of the time. I mean, this is the end game of Truth News, is take responsibility, because that's the way, that is the only way to sort of neutralize a new world order, is by really taking self-responsibility and responsibility for your own family and for, you know.
Yeah, and don't be led into the hypnotic state of just simply succumbing to this psychological manipulation that is going on around you. You know, recognize it, see it for what it is, and by simply recognizing it, you will actually become immune to it. But if you don't recognize it, and that's why I bring up this story. I mean, I was flipping through the Daily Telegraph on Sunday, and I saw it, and I thought, yeah, that's the story. We have to highlight this, because what's actually happening, and it's happening right across our society, is that the government, with corporate interests, you know, strongly behind them, is taking the role of injecting the population and controlling the population with ideas to change their behavior, to do what they see is right. And I'm going to play something else later on in the show from the BBC.
And they choose things like sunscreen, because no one can argue against it. It's totally sound information. Of course, everyone should put on sunscreen if they're out in the blistering sun of the afternoon.
Well, there are a lot of problems with sunscreen, actually.
Absolutely.
It's not totally safe. It's not actually wise to just continually smear sunscreen on yourself for several reasons, which I discussed once when we had Emily on the show, and we talked about it. It's not actually, and of course, someone's making money out of the sunscreen, you know.
No, absolutely. It isn't wise. It's better to have t-shirts and shade.
Well, yeah, it's better to not spend too much time in the sun, right?
Yeah.
Like, In the midsummer, you don't want to be spending hours and hours in the sun, unless you absolutely have to. Like some people have to for their work or whatever. But then you wear a hat and you wear protective clothing. But during summer, you know, an hour or so is about as much as I'd want to spend in the hot sun.
And you know what this is going to sound like? You're going to have these sort of very nasally trebled speakers. it's whistling out these jingles, which are going to sound very propagandist, and because it's over such a wide space of a beach, you'll hear the sound lag of other speakers, because then other speakers will play at the exact same time, but you'll only hear the catch-up of the speaker 200 meters down a little after. So you've got these sort of echoing, really slow reverb of all the speakers going off, and it'll sound very sort of...
Oh, yeah. I mean, the sound quality won't
very
be very good.
Propagandering.
Yeah, like it won't sound very good through those speakers, for starters, and it'll be incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine you're just trying to spend a bit of time on the beach. Suddenly, this stupid song comes up, and you're just trying to relax. You know, it's like it's your day off, and you're trying to relax, and the nanny state intervenes to tell you for your own good something that you should do. Now, once they establish this, and it says in the article here, if you read the whole article, they're doing it at Gosford and Cronulla to start off with, but they intend to roll it out across all beaches, right? But that won't be the end of it. There are loudspeaker systems throughout our cities now, and they were created for emergency purposes, right? It actually happened in 2007. Why not have voices on loudspeakers reminding you to do all kinds of things during the day? You know, maybe brush your teeth, you know.
Well,
did you brush your teeth this morning?
When the Youth Week was on, the big religious festival.
Yeah.
They were, because bird flu was happening at the time. No, it wasn't even that. It was just a flu pandemic. And they were over the loudspeakers. They were literally saying, wash your hands.
After
every half an hour. Do not touch things that you do not need to. Like they were repeating this sort of mantra of, use antiseptic, use soap when washing your hands. Yeah, that's right. Use soap when washing your hands. And it was this really robotic voice. It was quite demented. And yeah, like you said, Herod, it sort of stems out to more. Why not start telling you about, do not miss meetings. Make sure you are on time. I mean, why not? I mean, it gets great. I mean, you already see it with these traffic signs. Put on your seatbelt. I mean, there's a ridiculous notion like we're all children. Of course you're going to have to put on your seatbelt. I mean, you don't want to have an accident and really, be mangled up in the car. You know, you want to, for your own safety, you take a bit of self-responsibility and put on a fucking, seatbelt.
That's fine. Look, it starts to become like a classic fascist totalitarian system when this sort of thing happens. And it's happening in the UK big time. We've got, actually, in real time, we have people on megaphones shouting at pedestrians in several parts of the UK. Mm. They've actually set it up that way.
But if someone puts a paper cup on a wall and they're sitting there reading the news, they'll hear, please take your paper cup off the wall.
Yes.
Put it in the bin next to you. And the guy looks around what the hell?
Yeah.
And then sees the camera above and goes, oh, and then sort of apologizes to the camera and goes over and while he's looking at the camera, puts the thing in the bin and sort of bows backwards, walking away, saying, sorry,
Look, what it's about...
Or I will have you fined, the speaker says as well.
What it's about, folks, is a... We've moved into a shifting paradigm of... I mean, the paradigm is shifting of the way human beings perceive themselves. We're shifting into this mindset of being controlled, and we've got to stop it, okay? I'm going to show you something later in the show from... I'm going to play you something later in the show that was aired on the BBC, which shows you the brazen arrogance of the people who are doing this, that they think just psychological manipulation and literally just, using psychology to invade your brain and change your behavior, regardless of what you want to do, totally overriding your free will, is now regarded as the norm. And it makes me so angry, Josh, when I see this and I have to make an effort to control myself in talking about it, because I'm so outraged that they just smugly now talk about that as if that's a totally normal thing to do, just override people's opinions, will, knowledge, and just inject behavioral, psychological stimuli into you like you're a rat.
Now we sound like raving lunatics at this stage, right? And I'm going to break this down for the audience. Things seem very normal and positive. Like putting sunscreen on is a normal thing, and it seems reasonable. And when you have something that's reasonable, you think, well, I'm going to let that one slip. It's reasonable. And well, what are you getting all upset about? Sunscreen. I mean, and yet you're totally in your right to say that. Then they say, we're going to put out a Dobbin number for if you see your neighbor putting a bit of,
garbage in the wrong bin.
Garbage in the wrong bin or something. Or, then call this number. And so you think, well, that's reasonable. I mean, people shouldn't be putting a battery in, a car battery in a bin because it's, pretty poisonous and stuff. So, that sounds reasonable. Got along with it. And it goes on and on where they start ramping up and do this and do that and we're going to start. And every time it's a little bit less reasonable. Now they're saying in certain states in America, they're saying the state is going to have control of people's air conditioning, their indoors air conditioning, so that if the heat gets too much, the whole state can turn down people's, in their own homes, their air conditioning
remotely. Don't you worry, they'll be bringing that in here too. If the CPRS gets through, that'll be a definite thing they will bring in here. I've heard it talked about in Australia as well.
Yeah, and then we're going to have to put cameras in people's homes because, you know, you might be, not treating your kids right or whatever.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And this is the sort of general crawling of policy which starts with a reasonable level, and you think, don't be crazy, you know. But you always have to follow, A, the money.
Look, if the carbon pollution reduction scheme is passed, what will happen is they will offer people rebates to have that sort of system installed. If you have that system installed, which can turn off your heating or your air conditioning at its whim, you'll have cheaper electricity. That's exactly what they'll do.
Mm. Yeah, and it all starts out with being reasonable, and people have to really step back for a moment. At any sort of any time, the government says we're here to help, you've got to open your eyes up, you've got to open your ears up, you've got to open your mind up to follow what happens. Because what generally happens is government is only there to grow. It's only there to get bigger. And so you have to see it as what it is and say, right, well, this is obviously a growth of power. And
it's a bit like a malignant,
becoming more of a nanny state.
Isn't it? Like cancer.
Yeah, it is. I mean, all governments, they are a cancer, a form of cancer. I mean, they eventually... And I'm not just saying that to be extreme. If you look at every empire in the world, every major empire, they collapse in on themselves. They grow like cancers all around the world, and then they collapse and die. They die like what a cancer does.
And we are like the immune system.
Yeah.
This show is like the immune system attacking the cancerous growth of excessive control and excessive government.
Yeah, and I mean, this is why I can... You know, just think it, government's pretty useless. You know, when a doctor's there, they don't want to say, oh, well, let's get rid of most of the cancer. You know, little cancer is good. You know, let's just get rid of all of it. It's ridiculous. But, you know, we won't go there. But anyway.
Okay, let's move on. We've got a lot to get through. Just take a little quick break and we'll keep rolling the show.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Okay, moving right along. Let me just make a small disclaimer at this point. I'm not out to destroy government. Okay, and you know, as we talk here, it's free discussion, and we make statements. I'm not out to bring the government down, or completely, you know, rebuild the social order. That's not what I'm on about, and I just want to make sure that disclaimer goes in, because quite often people get an impression about what you're trying to do with the show when they hear you say something. That's got nothing to do with what the show is about. This show is about getting you the information, the quality information, breaking it down so that you understand, and you do what you want. I want democracy. I want freedom. Democracy in the true sense, the original meaning of the word, rule of the people. The will of the people, we run our own lives.
Mm.
End of story. Okay. Now, let's just quickly move on to another Australian story for tonight. The zombie has arisen. The zombie of internet filter has...
Ah, another zombie.
Yes, has stood up again.
We took this one down last year.
Yeah, we thought it was dead. But obviously, we didn't get that bullet into the head, see? And it's staggering, it's lurching towards us. You know, dripping, drooling blood and dripping maggots.
Mm.
And it's coming. It's coming straight at you.
Great.
Story came out yesterday on ABC News. I'll just quickly read the story here. Green light for internet filter plans. The federal government will introduce compulsory internet filtering to block overseas sites which contain criminal content, including child sex abuse and sexual violence. Communications Minister Stephen Conroy announced the changes today, following a controversial trial. Nice they said controversial, that's nice. Controversial trial to filter the internet.
It was only the trial that was controversial.
No, it was a controversial trial.
The rolling out of it was not controversial
at all. Straight ahead. Senator Conroy says some internet content is simply not suitable in a civilized society.
Thanks, Daddy.
Yeah, thanks, Dad. It is important that all Australians, particularly young children, are protected from this material.
Mm.
What material, Stephen? Oh, we can't tell you what it is. It's a secret blacklist. Okay. Mm. The things that you don't know about, we're going to protect you from. The government.
Now,
yes.
we've discussed this at length, and people can go back through the shows and this stuff, but I'm just going to recap quickly why this is such a really disgusting crawl on the liberties of people. Now, let's just start with why the internet is what it is. The internet is what it is because it's so free. It's truly free, a free form of expression. And with freedom, you're going to get offended. Now, the internet has grown so amazingly fast because it's free. Now, when this person says stuff like pedophilia and stuff, we've got to block that. They're not setting this system up for that. A system to filter our internet takes massive data centers, massive resources, a massive amount of money. So they're not going to just do that to set up that. They're doing this to set up political dissonance and other things. I can guarantee you that because it's all secret. It's all held away from you. They've in fact tried to jail someone for hacking in and exposing the blacklist that's already in play, by the way. And a lot of that was political sites. So it's absurd to think that, A, it's to protect children. I mean, people of the child protection communities have said, hey, this field is ridiculous. We've had...
So many different groups have opposed it.
And
the government just carries on, regardless. They haven't listened to anything. They're just lurching ahead with it in their zombie-like manner. And
Well, it's not democracy, is it? I mean, it's not what people want. And what the problem with this is that they use terminology like, you know, we're going to block pedophilia. And again, I mean, who the hell is going to oppose that? We all want to stop pedophilia. I mean, it's the most revolting thing I could imagine. But at the end of the day, again, they use this sort of language, so no one can oppose it.
But he tries to make all these...
If you oppose it, you're like, oh, what are you, a pedophile? It's like, no, I'm actually opposing it because of civil liberties and what the amazing thing the internet is. And what are they going to block? They're going to block way more than that.
Look, Senator Conroy tries to, sugarcoat this with all these seeming concessions, which are just nonsense when you actually analyse them. For example, says here, he says the government will not determine what is blacklisted on the internet in Australia. Rather, an independent body will determine what sites are rated as RC for refused classification. Oh, wow. So good. It's not going to be the government. No. It's going to be an independent body appointed by the government. I mean, do you get it? Do you get it? Do you catch my drift? It's repackaging. It's using weasel words. It's using language to make something seem to be not what it is. Of course, it would always be a body. Isn't it? We're calling it independent. What does independent mean? I mean, they've got to report to someone. How can they be totally independent? Okay. Now, there's massive criticism of this, right? Electronic Frontiers Australia is one of the main groups that has put out information and has worked hard against it. They've pointed out the flaws. For example, here's a quote. Here they're really only talking about how the plan itself won't even achieve its own stated goals. Okay, they're only deconstructing what it actually is, so you can see that it can't even possibly work. Quote: although it may address some technical issues, what it leaves out is far more important. Exactly what will be blocked? Who will decide? And why is it being attempted in the first place? Mr. Jacobs from Electronic Frontiers Australia says the ease with which users can circumvent the filtering raises questions about what it is actually trying to accomplish. What we're talking about is a filter that can only intercept accidental access to prohibited material. Any motivated user will be able to get around it. It will be quite easy. So who is this being targeted at? If it's targeted at the people who traffic in illegal material, well then clearly it's going to be worthless because they'll be able to get around it any time they want to. If it's teenagers, the same is true, unfortunately, and given the types of material that are going to be on the blacklist, younger children are unlikely to be affected one way or the other. So from a common sense point of view, it's very logical what he said there. It breaks it down. It shows you that this system does not achieve its own goals in any meaningful way. So what are the real goals? Well, let's look at what the consequences will be and then infer what the goals might be. One of the consequences will be that sites which have been blacklisted will no longer be accessible, even though they may come up on a Google search, assuming that Google continues to index those sites, and we don't know, or and other search engines, but I mean, let's just take Google for example. Assuming that those sites continue to be indexed, it may come up in a search, but when you click on the link, it'll go to a 404 page, what we call a failed page or a forbidden page. They all have different internet codes. Now, you as a internet browser will have no idea what's going on. Okay, so you basically won't be able to. I mean, it's not like you're going to get a notification that says this is a bad site, you're not allowed to view it. That they can't do that either, because then you'll want to know what it is. I mean, the way this is going to work is that you just won't ever, you'll be blocked from visiting sites that you didn't even know were there. And assuming that those sites only ever had really, really bad, evil things in them, you could say, what's the problem? Just as we said before, what's the problem with telling you to put your sunscreen on? Okay. What's the problem with chopping people's hands off for stealing? I mean, if you steal, you're a bad person, and you're not a bad person, so you'll never have your hand chopped off, right? So what's wrong with that? Well, a lot of people think there is something wrong with that, okay? Because every system can make mistakes, and not only can it make mistakes, people can be deliberately targeted, persecuted, because you put the power in a centralized authority and it becomes a tool. And then it becomes a tool for political oppression. So we know that it doesn't work in terms of stopping child pornography. But in terms of political oppression, it could well work. We have a really good reason to think that it will work by looking at its actual practical functionality. We appear to have suffered a loss of communication with Josh. I'm just getting him back on the line. Just please stand by.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm Hereward Fenton with Josh Jackson. Josh, you dropped out when I was in mid-rant there.
Sorry about that.
You're back with me. Yeah, look, anyway, I was just getting totally carried away with that. Now, the point here, as I've highlighted, is that the real objective can be inferred from looking at what it doesn't do. I mean, it doesn't do any of the things that it's supposed to do, but it leaves the door open to do a whole lot of things that we certainly don't want it to do. Now, I'm going to just flip over to another article, which was published today in the Sydney Morning Herald. Our title is Internet Filter Laws Need Urgent Public Debate. Yesterday's announcement by Senator Stephen Conroy that the government will push forward with legislation of mandatory internet filtering came as no surprise. This is by Bjorn Landefeld for the SMH. All the twists and turns in the process so far have pointed in this direction. The report that underpins the government's decision to legislate did not offer any new ammunition to the proponents of the scheme, but, although not obvious at first sight, the report is actually a positive outcome for the scheme's critics. The report's findings reinforce that dynamic content filtering, or inspection of data as it passes through the system without any prior knowledge about the content, is not viable. There is a clear trade-off between accuracy and performance penalty, and current technology does not perform at an acceptable level. The findings also confirm current wisdom that list-based filtering can be done at large scale and without significant performance penalty. This is great news, since not only does it undermine the endeavour to enforce dynamic filtering, it also provides a political escape route to list-based filtering of refused classification content. Now, let me just emphasise at this point, I totally disagree with what this article is saying.
And you're an IT specialist. I mean, this is what you do.
I do work in this area.
Extremely complex, massive database structures of sites every day.
Yeah. I haven't read this report, but all I can tell you is that as far as I'm concerned, list-based filtering is no better than dynamic filtering, and it will lead to worse, you know, mistakes. I mean, once you're on a list, you know, this happens so often. You get on, it's like the no-fly list in the US. Have you heard about that? There's like a million people on this no-fly list.
Mm.
And they get on it by accident. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. And half the time, no one knows why they're on it, because the Homeland Security Department is this great sprawling bureaucracy, you know, and someone gets on the list, but they never get taken off. That's what will happen with this. Some URL will get added to that list because of some bogus reason.
Oh, look, I've been at work when, you know, work's got mandatory filters and stuff, and I don't mind that. It's a private enterprise. They can do whatever they want with their internet access. But, you know, I was doing I'm a designer by trade, and I was doing a graphic on breast cancer, looked up breasts. Instantly, it came up sex crime, something about sex crime. Like, I mean,
really?
The filter, sex crime filter, or something. It was just like, wah, wah, my screen. I was like, wah, you know, dead or away. And I mean, this is, you know, people will really, I mean, it's so wrong. The filtering on a mandatory level is so wrong. I mean, on so many, I'm sorry, but I just,
Look, there's just another point I'd like to say in response to the paragraph here where it says the report's findings reinforce that dynamic content filtering is not viable.
Mm.
Now, this word viable, I find it quite offensive. Mm. Let me give you an analogy. Let's say someone had proposed a scheme to exterminate people using gas ovens, right?
Mm.
And then an expert team came in and analyzed just how many people can we push into the ovens. Our target is to kill a million people, but we're just not going to be able to do it. It's not viable.
Mm.
We can't exterminate a million people easily with these ovens.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extreme analogy, but it's spot on. I mean, it is spot on. The language they use is like, well, we've given you a choice. We're not going to use this because that's not viable, but we're going to do it the exact same thing, but in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. Forget about anything to do with your opinion, your rights, your votes, your democracy. Forget about all that. It's just whether it was technically viable. And we just found, you know, one way of doing it or another way of doing it. Oh, and by the way, you know, this is not about suppressing free speech. Just shh, be quiet.
By the way, folks, if anyone's frightened of bad content, you know, I mean, Windows 7 comes with its automatic, like, adult content thing. It comes out with, you know, a filter for social networking. It, you know, and there's freeware. There's multiple packs of freeware, open source freeware, to block stuff that you don't want your children to see. You can even ring up your ISP and ask for certain filtering. I'm pretty sure at certain levels. I don't think many of them do it, but they'll definitely refer you onto nanny software that you can get.
Yeah, you can do all that. You can certainly do all that. Look, we all know it's ridiculous, and it's tedious to have to talk about it. You know,
Conroy guy. Well, I mean, what's his deal? Where does he get off wanting to control the lives of so many people?
Look, he's,
and then being, you know, who is commanding this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to cast any aspersions about Conroy himself, but he's a religious type of person, okay. You know, I know there's a lot of really decent Christians and all kinds out there, and I don't mean to mean anything by that, but quite often what you do find is that these people hide behind the cloak of religion, and they're not wholesome people. Basically, people who want to suppress your rights, you got to understand this. They're not good people. They're not wholesome people. They're not decent people, okay? Because it's not a decent thing to want to do. It's an obnoxious, offensive thing to want to do.
Yeah, so to basically assert that it's to stop pedophilia is so ridiculously awful and disgusting, because it makes people look at people that really are against this internet filtering as if they are all pedophiles. And it's important to know that if you really want to destroy pedophilia, you've searched down and tracked down these evil freaks that are making this disgusting filth and posting on the internet, and you arrest them, and you put them on trial. You don't just block their content.
Yeah, of course you do. I mean, you track them down. You know, if they're abusing kids, you track them down. That's what you do.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, and then it'll be like, phishing scams. Oh, we've got to block all phishing scams. And phishing is where, you know, these people will say, oh, you know, we've got Dr. Jumbubwa, this multi-millionaire, is actually, you know, thank God we found you. We've got all this money to give to you, but we have to get your bank account. No, anyway, it's a way to extract vast amounts of money slowly.
Of course,
and
everyone will agree with that. Everyone will say
there's a lot of scams, but they'll put them all of them on there. And of course, there'll be a lot of scams that aren't even scams. A lot of things that aren't even scams that get put on the list. You eventually you get an internet with 3,000 channels on them, and it'll just be exactly like the television. It'll be exactly like TV. It'll be a TV with 3,000 channels, and the Coca-Cola channel will be on channel 300 and 312, and that's your internet.
And then, of course, they'll bring hate speech into it, and they'll say, you know, these websites that have hate speech in them have to be banned. A lot of people go, great, you know, who likes hate speech? Gee, well, you know, why should we worry about that? And then, of course, well, they'll say, well, you know, Holocaust deniers. Well, yes, we've got to ban, you know, we'll add those to this, because everyone knows that Holocaust denial is a form of hate speech. And some people will scratch their heads at that, and then once
global warming denial.
Well, yes, I mean once you start to include things like historical revisionism as a banned topic because it's evil in some manner that some people believe it to be, then anything that's got the label denier, as we've seen, you know, we've got AIDS deniers, we've got global warming deniers, we've got 9/11 deniers. They call them deniers as well. So you'll find it won't be hard for them, you know, at some future point in time. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year or next year, but it won't be hard for them at some future point in time to run those arguments.
No, and then, I mean, it's not too far of a stretch, and this is total conjecture, but this is the kind of thing that you need to do. This is part of critical thinking, folks, and this is stuff we never got taught at school, is you get a term like you get something happening, and you have to extrapolate from what could the potential of this legislation be. Now, the potential of this legislation at the end point, at the end game, could be you have to pay not to be on the list.
Yeah,
you have to pay a tax not to be on the list. and this makes it so not anyone can just post anything. You can't just put a blog up and write your ramblings, you know, your crazy, crazy ramblings. No, you have to, you know, pay this tax, $50 a week or a month or a year, to basically not be on the content filtering list.
Yeah.
It won't even be that direct. It'll be like, oh no, you need to pay a tax because we need to rate your content, and that takes a person. The person has to sit there and decide whether you're G or P or if you're AO for adult only, or if you're
actually Josh. You've just given me a really scary thought, because it just suddenly occurred to me how easy it would be to change it from an exclusion type filter to an inclusion type filter.
Absolutely. And it will happen like that. I mean, this is what critical thinking is all about, folks. You have to take something and not just listen to what we're saying, but try to use your brain to figure out what they're actually doing here.
Yeah. I mean, let me just explain here. An exclusion type filter is one which says, you know, all sites are okay except these ones, which are on a list. Right? That's excluding some sites, right? An inclusion type filter is one which would say all sites are banned except these ones, which are approved. In other words, it just blocks the entire internet except for the URLs that they have specifically approved.
Yeah, and again, it's ridiculous to think that this would happen from A to Z. It won't just happen like that, because it's an extreme jump. People won't stand for it. And too many lives and people, too many people's lives depend on the internet as it is right now. So what happens? Well, they go from A to B, to B to C to D. They slowly change stuff. They slowly make it. Oh, it's an exclusion thing at the moment. And then more and more things exclude. Eventually, more than 51% of sites will be excluded. Accidentally, or, you know, and it's this whole bureaucracy, and because it's a list, you need to employ a vast amount of list creators, and these all cost money, so there's going to have to be a tax to be on the list.
Yeah.
So the tax to be on the list, how are you going to pay for that? Well, it's actually easier just to make it an an inclusion list.
Yeah, and in fact, they could even run the argument that that's technically better. Yeah, and it'd probably be easier to do, because you just block everything, you know. It's much easier to just block everything than it is to selectively.
It's a license. You have to have a license to be on the internet. You have to have a license to have a blog. So you have to apply for a license. And look,
that's a terrifying thought.
And this is a proven thing, Herod. We've read articles about this on the from various papers. I can't recite them now.
This is Internet 2, in a sense, isn't it? I mean, this is another concept of 3. Internet 2.
You know, we've already hit 2.
Yeah.
I mean, there are already filters in place.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing, and the great push isn't from family protection agencies that are worried about children, about pedophilia. It is not that. The vast amount of people pushing this are the content industries, like the games industry, the movie industry, and especially the music industry. Those industries, the content industries, they're called the content industries, are pushing, lobbying very, very strongly. And this is why we're not a democracy where the majority rule, but it's a democracy where a minority of lobbyists rule, because they have been lobbying the government so strongly for this content filtering, because once it's an inclusive, you know, because the first things that will be excluded is peer-to-peer networks. The first things. So it's nothing about protecting anyone. It's all about protecting corporate interests. And also, a television style, broadcasting style, one-way, non-feedback system like the traditional broadcast mechanisms and the traditional music broadcast mechanisms are a much better way of selling products, which is great for the private corporate interests, but also B, for propaganda, that the government can give any message anyhow and there's no way of anyone talking back because A, you don't have a license, and if you say the wrong things with your license, well, you just get revoked because you're saying inappropriate stuff. And this is an extrapolation. It's not what's happening now. It sounds ridiculous, but I can tell you right now, a lot of people in high places would wish that the government was like that, the internet was like that.
Indeed, indeed. Look, let's take a break for a song. I got a tune lined up here, just to sort of give us a bit of Christmas cheer. I've got a song here, originally written by John Lennon. This is actually performed by Sarah McLachlan with a whole group of kids from an orphanage. It's quite a nice rendition of Merry Christmas, War is Over. Here we go.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. So this is Christmas, I hope you have fun. Near and the dear one, the old and the young. Very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's
okay, we're back. War is over,
yeah,
if you want it.
He wrote some good anti-war tracks, the old Lennon.
Well, you know something interesting? When he wrote that song, he was in New York, and he created these huge billboards that, like, he spent a lot of money on it, right? Because he had a lot of money. And he put these huge billboards all over the country saying, "War is over." And it was quite clever. It was, he was using psychology, right? "War is over!" exclamation mark, you know, in brackets, "if you want it." And it actually, was just black on white. It was just big, big, huge billboards, black on white. "War is over." I'd like to do that again. I'd like to.
Well, someone, a group recently did the same thing. What they did is they did a mock-up of the New York Times, and basically made a whole newspaper with the front page saying "the war is over, troops leaving Afghanistan, Iraq and Afghanistan," with all these withdrawals, the pictures of a big withdrawal, and everyone celebrating. And they literally printed you know, hundreds of thousands of these newspapers and handed them out everywhere and sold them, I think, like and it was huge, and in fact some people even blogged instantly about it and this and that, and then it came out, you know, pretty fast. Yeah. It was a big hoax. Yeah. That was amazing. That was only recently.
I think just the message, you know, war is over. You know, war, it can be over. In other words, think about it. You know, I that to me is not manipulative. To me, that is actually just, it's using language and the power of meaning to wake you up. And, you know, as much as I'm criticizing, you know, manipulative psychological techniques, I think, you know, we as passionate, you know, people and as activists, we need to also think of what's the best way of communicating something to stimulate.
Well, it's a wake up call. It's a way to tell people, hey, you know, it can be over. We are in power, supposedly.
And, I'd like to actually play that song. I'm putting a call out now. If anyone listening to this show would like to busk with me, I'd like to do that song in Sydney with a few people, like a, you know, so it's got a bit of a choir, right? Because it's got two parts to it. It's got the harmony, "War is over if you want it," while the verses go, and it has two levels to it. So it kind of, it gets into your brain that way. I'd love to do that. If anyone wants to get out on the street and we can do a few rehearsals.
You know, jump onto the website, truthnews.com.au.
It's 10 days before Christmas. We can do it this weekend. We can rehearse it, and we can just go to somewhere in the city and we can sing that. And we can hand out information at the same time.
Oh, you'll feel great afterwards. You know.
Yeah, I'm totally up for it. If anyone wants to do it, I'm there. Okay. And I also want to say that this show is going through Christmas, through New Year. I'm not taking a break, right?
We're powering on.
No, we don't give up, right? We don't take breaks.
Tyranny doesn't go on a holiday. No.
We're just here pumping it out, okay? And I'll be pumping it out until they come and drag me away, right? I'll be sending out the Mayday signal right until they come to my door, kick it in, and drag me away to a concentration camp.
So you haven't taken your shot yet.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'll never just give in and stop until they stop me. Okay. That's my pledge.
So, folks, I'd beg you to check out the Twitter feed. It's an amazing resource. Both Harold and myself contribute to it. If you go to twitter.com/truthnewsoz, and you know, if you don't, if you aren't a Twitter member, just subscribe to the RSS feed.
Don't, because be a twit.
You get you know, the Twitter RSS feed. If you know, you'll get some amazing little news articles every day just there, and you can always unsubscribe as easy as one click. So
don't be a twit. Be a tweeter.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's some amazing, I mean, every day we find some great stories, and you know, positive as well as negative. And so And we usually talk about them on the show. So, you know, and also it's a way for you guys to keep in touch with us. So if you are a member of Twitter and you find some really important story that you find is important, you can tweet that to us, and we can check it out and talk about it and expose it to this massive audience, this forever-growing audience. I mean, I'm surprised every day when... every time when Harold gives me the stats on the show, I mean, it's just growing in leaps and bounds. And, and you know, a lot of people, they don't comment. And, you know, we sometimes think, oh, there's not that many people. But they're really, the bandwidth is getting really chewed. And that's also one thing I'd like to say. If people want to help support this show.
Yes. Now, we don't have a payment page, but I've got some time available because I do work normally, but Christmas is coming up, so I won't be in my day job, and I'm going to have some time to put into setting up a payment page and a few other things like the T-shirt page as well, so you can buy a T-shirt. Mm. So I'm planning to get all that happening over Christmas and New Year. It's really important. I'm prioritizing that.
It's literally gigs and gigs and gigs and gigs of downloads every day. Unbelievable. Hundreds of gigs every day of the show. And that's because we do get some really good guests on, and we talk about some really potent topics. So
folks,
tell your friends also, give them the present of truth. You know, it's a free podcast, so pass it on. So that you just tell them to search for Truth News on iTunes and they'll find us.
Absolutely. Okay, got to move on. I've got some really important stuff to get through here, so just stand by. Okay, just quickly, I want to cover a delightful story here. We're not going to spend too much time on it, but the title is... CIA pushes for airstrikes in Pakistani city. Mm. This is, you know, I'm being sarcastic, okay? Senior US officials are pushing to expand CIA drone strikes beyond Pakistan's tribal region and into a major city in an attempt to pressure the Pakistani government to pursue Taliban leaders based in Quetta. The proposal has opened a contentious new front in the clandestine war. The prospect of predator aircraft strikes in Quetta signals a new US resolve to decapitate the Taliban, but it also risks rupturing the United States' relationship with Pakistan. The concern has created tension among Obama administration officials over whether unmanned aircraft strikes in a sprawling city of 850,000 are a realistic option. Realistic. This is another one of those weasel words. Realistic. Can you believe they use that word realistic?
Yeah, I mean, folks, if you aren't absolutely flabbergasted by these comments, and I mean, here are all these goodies, great, we voted for Obama, fantastic, you know, we're going to get change. And here we are realistically talking...
Yeah, is it viable?
...about... them striking Pakistani cities.
Is it viable to push
aircraft?
Yeah, yeah. Is it? Tell me, is it viable to push 1,000 Jews per day into the gas chambers? Maybe not viable. Maybe we can only do 500 a day.
Yeah. Is it viable to actually drop bombs on a city, a vast city?
Yeah.
Weasel out a few.
Is it practical?
I mean. You know, here we have a president that was voted in for some sort of change, and he's pushed on the spying of American citizens over the internet further than Bush ever did. He's escalated the war in Afghanistan. He has, he's done everything. He's just taken on a baton. And where's the outrage?
Where is the outrage? Look, if they launch drone strikes, I mean... They've already done it. We know they've done it. But the way they're talking about it here, this is what's so offensive, is that they're saying, hey, you know, like, can you imagine? Let's visualize it. Some CIA guy comes into a meeting and they're all sitting around the table. Hey, we think it's about time we launch some predator drone strikes right in the heart of Quetta. Yeah, you know, like apartment buildings. Yeah. That'd be good, because we know that's where they are. We just got to strike them. It's a city. Hello, there's millions of people. You know, families, children. What are you want to just murder? You know, dozens or hundreds of people because you're trying to execute without even a trial.
You've decided that
there's no trial. We're just going to execute that person. But because we can't do it precisely, we're going to just throw a bomb at the building and kill anyone who's near him as well.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Is anyone home?
What a nice guy. Geez, Obama's a nice guy. What a lovely man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can give bloody good speeches. But when he starts dropping bombs on children, and he's already started. He started as soon as he got in.
Yes.
And the anti-war movement was really subdued by it all, by this ridiculous circus, which was the American elections. All this rhetoric about pulling out and about how war is bad and all this. Meanwhile, he gets a peace prize, has escalated wars, is now talking seriously about pushing into Afghanistan, into Pakistan.
Indeed.
Anyway, so check out the Twitter feed for that.
Sure.
And also the show notes, folks. Also, leave a comment. I mean, if you have something to say about this, if you're outraged about this, if you want to meet other people about, you know, as well, get on the show notes, leave some comments, truthnews.com.au.
Absolutely.
It's really important.
Absolutely. Now, look, I'm just going to move on with another story. We're getting back into the climate change topic, and I want to play you something that I picked up on the BBC, and this gets back to our theme, which we were discussing earlier, about the degree to which psychological manipulation has become just a normal thing in discourse. And we're just becoming conditioned to it. This was actually aired on the BBC earlier this week, and I've got the audio ready to play.
Bring it on.
Okay, here we go. The theme of the show was, you know, how can we change behavior? It was all about the environment. And it's actually a program called Health Check, which is just a health program. But what I find with the BBC is that any program can become a platform for propaganda on the BBC. And they often talk about climate change, and just any news topic can be a platform for climate change. So this is an example. There's a health show, but now they're talking, how can we control people, program them, brainwash them to behave better environmentally? And they have a couple of so-called experts on the show. So here we go.
I've got two guests with me in the studio today. Professor Alan Kasdin from Yale University in the USA, who used his recent presidential address to the American Psychological Association to highlight the power of psychology to address climate change. And Simon Retallick from the British think tank, the Institute for Public Policy Research. He's just produced a detailed analysis of how to persuade people in Britain to live in a more environmentally friendly way. Alan, if I can start with you. I mean, when it comes to saving the planet, you might think first of all of clever engineering or bringing in green policies. I mean, for most people, psychology wouldn't be top of the list of the subjects that come to mind. What sort of impact can it have?
Well, just starting off with policy and technology, the adoption of these very much depends on getting people to do what we've invented or we've decided that may actually be of help. And psychology is about changing human behavior, changing attitudes, and changing knowledge. The issue is there are so many opportunities to apply psychology and psychological research, from interventions with young children in schools to college students to people in the community. That is, when it comes to how to implement a policy or
school,
a practice
get
or
them
a new
early.
Program,
get them early and you know,
don't,
change
don't
their
teach
behavior.
Them how to think.
Yeah, change
don't
their behavior.
Don't teach them how to critically think
and take
a question and really churn through it and see the positives and negatives and extrapolate to consequence. No. Tell them how to think and then manipulate them into thinking certain things.
Did you notice how he said there that psychology is about changing behavior? Gee, I didn't know that. I thought psychology was the study of the mind. He said it's about changing behavior. That's what it's about for him. Okay.
Psychology, that is all about psychological research.
Well, throughout the programme, we're going to hear more about how it can be done in practice. But Simon, why did you decide to look at how to change behaviour?
Well, in the UK, it's quite simple. The public, in their decisions, are responsible for something like 44% of the UK's CO2 emissions, the main greenhouse gas that causes climate change. And so if we're to have a chance of meeting pretty ambitious emission reduction targets, there's really no choice but to find ways of engaging with the public, understanding what motivates them, in order to succeed in changing their behaviour so that they use less energy in their home, that they take decisions about their transport choices that have a smaller impact on the atmosphere.
Well, again, we'll come back to the detail of how to do that and what you found a little later.
Just pause it there. Now, I just want to point out one thing. We're going to play some more in a second. What that guy, the second guy who spoke, said, let me deconstruct it for you. He just said people's decisions that they make in their daily life are largely responsible for the CO2 emissions that are created in the environment. But now, when he says people's decisions that they make in their daily life, what sort of decisions might they be? Who you vote for, that's a decision, right? Do you vote for the party that wants to bring in an emissions trading scheme, or do you vote for the party that is opposed to the emissions trading scheme? That's called democracy. That's called your choice based on your view. Correct? That's a decision.
But this is the thing.
He's saying, but we, and who the hell is we? I mean, who is he speaking for? Who is the entity that he calls we? Because he says, we are going to change all that. We are going to make you make the decisions that we know you should make. Now, that could mean you'll vote.
It's funny that he says we, because when I talk about certain things that I'm
into, it's the royal we. I know.
Generally talk about we.
It's the royal prerogative. So we are going to make you vote correctly. Because if you vote for the climate skeptics, you'll be naughty, you know, you'll be voting for people that'll be saying we should put CO2 into the atmosphere. Bad. We are going to reprogram you and brainwash you. And everyone listen to this. This is a radio show for the whole world, and we have decided that we'll just brainwash people now. That's actually what's going on in the show.
The listenership to that sort of a radio show is just absolutely enormous as well.
It's massive. This goes out to millions and millions of people. Now, I'm just going to fast forward it to the next bit, which is even more outrageous. Just forwarding it to the correct time code here, which I've had written down. Okay, here we go. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it really is important for people to understand that the issues with, you know, the current democracy is that they can make you believe whatever they want you by utilizing language and the media.
And the power of television and advertising.
And the power of television and advertising. Yeah. And not only that, the power of the public schooling system. The public schooling system is basically down to teach the kids to not think for themselves, to remember stuff out of books instead of actual learning, to be totally submissive to authority and to sit there and just take in everything that's fed to you and to be, you know, put into these groups where you're sort of pitted against other people of the same age group. All the way from day one, you know, of school, you're sort of taught to only obey the teacher, even if the teacher tells you to do something absolutely ridiculous, you have to obey, sit down, you have to shut up, and you have to, you know, I mean, this is totally unnatural for a child. And, you know, I mean, sorry, to, I'm sort of
no, saying, it's th- thank
moving
you.
Along
thank
a bit.
Thank you for pointing that out. Thank you. I mean, it's totally, you know, totally correct. Yeah. Look, I'll continue here because I really want to play this next segment, which is much more direct and much more really, I think even you, Josh, might raise an eyebrow when you hear this, because these people are becoming very open and arrogant about their agenda. So here we go.
So, Alan, the message about awareness does seem to be getting across, but does awareness always translate into action?
You know, we know so much about this. It's as frustrating that so much effort is going into this. Awareness is a precondition, often, for change, but it isn't even necessary for change. So notions like, you're making a choice and be rational, or we have to persuade you that climate change is important, that can all actually be circumvented. The notion that attitude change leads to behavior change is tenuous at best. We could focus directly on making change with actually out persuading people that it's important.
So you don't actually need to even win the argument about climate change. They don't have to believe it.
It's a pyramid.
Okay, let me just pause there. Let's just redline, underline that. You don't even need to win the argument about climate change. That's what she just said.
Yeah, and even more,
Did you hear it? You don't have to believe it. No,
like
we're going to bypass rational thought. We're going to bypass rational thought. That's what they've said.
Are you amazed?
Do you have like tingles going up your spine? Are you horrified? What is your reaction to this? Okay, yeah. I'll continue.
Victory. You spend so much on it and you have changed little or no behavior. There are other avenues that also should be pursued.
So what sort of things? What can psychology offer and how we should change behavior?
Where to begin? The internet and the media in general, for example. We talk in movies about product placement. There could be behavior placement because in movies there's a huge modeling incentive that people don't even realize what the impact is of modeling, but it's huge. That would be much better or certainly should accompany awareness issues. We know from neuroeconomics that decisions are not made rationally and people can't even voice many of the reasons that have gone into their decisions. So we have to now talk about what does influence behavior, and it's not these direct face-to-face change your light bulb. Much more and different is needed to have real impact.
But is it going to be any fun watching, you know, people in films, you know, behaving well environmentally and
you won't
doing
even
their
notice
recycling?
It.
We want them doing things and having plots.
No. The research suggests you won't even notice it. So you run out of a room and you turn the lights out. It won't even be noticed. And
you won't even notice it, folks. You won't even know that you've been brainwashed. You'll just suddenly do things. You'll have post-hypnotic suggestions put into you that'll just suddenly make you turn a light bulb off.
We no longer really notice the absence of cigarette smoking in most movies in the United States. What we do notice now is that when there is cigarette smoking, that was the opposite decades ago. And so this will become natural. And what we want this to do is we want it to become natural and automatic.
And are you finding that people are thinking that psychology is a subject that's got a place for this? Do people believe you when you tell them, yes, it's psychology that can do this?
I don't want people to believe me. It's a matter of research on the goals of this movement. We want to change behaviors. We want people to do things differently in their home, in their driving habits. This is not economics, but it could be conducted in conjunction with economics. It's really about how to change human behavior. And that's what our research is really all about.
Well, during the program, we're going to hear from different countries around the world about what people think about climate change and how they're changing their lifestyles.
Okay, look, I won't waste any more of your time with this absolute trash. Okay.
I think we should chuck in the interview there of Christopher Monckton with the Greenpeace Act right there, because
all right,
we need to showcase just, you know, we need to manipulate brains right here.
Yeah.
It's not a manipulation at all. It's just an exposure of some the other side of the argument. Now, we're not telling you to believe this. We're not telling you not to believe it. We're just saying have a listen, because the best way of emancipating yourself is through knowledge and critical thinking.
Absolutely. And you know what Lord Monckton is doing is using information in the true sense of to educate, to edify.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to go. That's what education is.
Yeah.
Right? To educate means to lead forth. The original Latin root means to draw out, to draw up.
Mm.
That's what it's about. Okay? It's not about brainwashing. That's not what education is, folks. Sorry to have to break the news to you.
Here, read this passage and memorize it word for word. And if you do, you get an A. And if you don't, you get a Z or an F.
Yeah, and it's certainly not about modifying behavior, that disgusting phrase. Okay, let's get the Moncton interview up here. This impromptu interview is conducted by Lord Moncton at Copenhagen on the street with a young lady, and it's quite interesting. We might not play the whole thing. I'll play some of it. Here we go.
Well, it's very kind of you to come here and join our conference today. May I ask why you have come?
I think I've already answered that question. I've just come because I'm a member of Greenpeace, and
right.
We've heard that this conference is about people who negate climate change.
Right. Now, there has been climate change, hasn't there, for 4 billion years?
Well, you tell me, I'm young.
Right. That's a good answer. That's a very good answer. Can I ask you then, if there's been climate change for 4 billion years, why are you against it now?
Because, over the last 80 years, climate change has been really, really accelerating, and we have a big problem now, and we need to act very, very eagerly.
Right. Now, the UN, in its calculations, shows that in all but the last 20 years, we could not have had any effect on the climate. It's a very recent effect that we might have had. So, given that there has been warming for 300 years, and 280 years, we could not have made any difference. Are you saying that in the last 20 years, we have suddenly done something that really changes the climate?
Well, if you look at glaciers, if you look at the polar, at the poles, and if you look at weather changes, it's very, very obvious.
Let me ask you about the poles. Are you saying that there has been any unusual melting of ice at the poles?
I think so.
And how do you know that?
Because I'm reading reports, I'm hearing people talk, and I'm reading the press.
Have you ever checked any of the data from the scientific institutions or in the learned literature directly?
Well, I have checked the reports from, for instance, the reports from Greenpeace, because they
And Greenpeace is a campaigning organisation, isn't it?
What do you mean by campaigning organisation?
Well, it's not a weather bureau, is it?
No, of course not.
No. So my question then is, why do you believe reports, whether from Greenpeace or anybody else, without having actually checked them?
I mean, I've seen it, because I'm from Norway, actually. I'm from Norway, and I've seen glaciers 20 years ago, and they were much bigger than they are now. And I see that fauna and flora is changing in Norway because of global warming.
But this has been happening for 4 billion years, as we agreed before. You will get changes sometimes towards cooling and sometimes towards warming.
That's right, but it hasn't happened so quickly as over the past 20 years, as I've observed myself.
I see. Let me ask you this question, then. In the last 10 years, how much has global temperature gone up?
0.7 degrees.
In the last 10 years?
No, not in the last...
No, I'm asking about the last 10 years.
I'd just have to guess.
Guess?
I would say 0.1 degree.
Right, it's actually gone down very slightly. About 0.05 degrees. It's gone down for 10 years. In fact, it hasn't increased.
I just want to pause it there, because I really want to emphasize that you shouldn't just go out and repeat what Lord Moncton said, right? This is not about repeating what he said. Go and check the sources yourself.
Learn the actual... I mean, learn from the interview style.
Learn from the style.
The interviewing style is extraordinary. You don't see him barking info at this woman. You see him asking her a question, letting her answer, and then giving his rebuttal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, I just want to talk to this question of the last 10 years, because it's extremely important, because it came up last night in the interview with Lateline, the debate between George Monbiot and Professor Ian Plimer, because this question of the past 10 years is a very difficult and contentious one. Now, Lord Moncton there is quite right to say that there is information that suggests that global warming has actually cooled. There has not been warming for the last 10 years, and there has been a slight cooling. That data comes from the Hadley weather monitoring source in the UK, and it's not that easy to find this information. I've been a bit frustrated because I today was going through searching and trying to confirm some of these things about this 10-year thing.
As frustrating as it is, you've actually, you know, you're passionate enough to go, like, if someone's passionate enough to go out in the street and campaign really harshly for massive changes to the global order,
yes,
then you know, do at least, I mean, how long? What did it take you? A couple of hours? 3 hours?
Well, no, I'm still not, I haven't resolved it. Okay, but what I can tell you is this, is that if you go, and we'll put all these links up in the show notes, but you can go to a site called the Met Office, and it's a UK climate site, and you will get the data that confirms what Lord Monckton is saying. Basically, what you'll see is that there was a peak in 1998, and it decreased, and then it went up again in 2005, but it didn't reach the peak of 98. Then it decreased again in 2007, 2008, again lower and lower. So if you map that, what you get, according to the normal meanings of words in English, is a decline. Now, a lot of the global warmists look at that and they go, it's not a decline, it's just the warming slowed down. That's how they try to redefine the meaning of that. Well, it's a decline by normal English, okay? Meaning the end point is cooler than the start point. If you start from 1998, the end point is cooler. By definition, it's a decline. But it comes up in the Monbiot debate, which we're going to play in a second, and Monbiot puts a ridiculous twist on it. But there's another complication, because it only comes up in that one set of data, which is the UK data. If you go to NASA, the GISS site, that's the Goddard Space Center site, it doesn't show the decline. It shows a steady increase. Okay, this is tricky territory. Now, my opinion on this, and again, this is just my opinion, and don't quote me or follow me on this unless you agree with it, but this is my opinion, is that talking about climate change over a period of 10, 20, 50, even 100 years is meaningless, because all you're getting is noise. All you're seeing in graphs, if your measurement time frame is too short, is noise and variability. And you can read into it whatever you want. Like, it'll be hotter this year, cooler the next year. You'll get a trend where it's getting cooler, then suddenly it's getting warmer. It's like you go to the casino and you bet on the roulette wheel, and you plot that out and you'll get a graph, right? And it'll look like there are trends in there, right? That's what you're getting, is noise, right? Now, over longer and longer time frames, you start to be able to filter out the noise from the actual trends. And we do know that if we go back 300 years, that we start to see what was the Little Ice Age, and then coming out of the Little Ice Age around about 1875, it starts to get warmer. And you know, since the mid, not 1875, round about then, you know, see, I'm getting confused with my facts as well. We had a medieval warming period where it became very warm, and then it cooled down and went into what was called the Little Ice Age. And then it came out of the Little Ice Age, and ever since we came out of the Little Ice Age, which was in the 19th century, it's been getting warmer and warmer. And you can see that graph going up and up and up and up, okay?
What do you say to the to the rebuttal to the Little Ice Age, saying that it was a localized...
Hang on, you're talking about the medieval warming period.
Oh, right.
Okay, today I did some research. Now, I investigated how do they actually do what they call proxy temperature measurements, right? Now, what are proxy temperature measurements? Well, thermometers only go back a couple of hundred years, and we only have solid temperature readings to about the mid-19th century. So if you want to go back to earlier periods in time, you don't have temperature weather stations with thermometers anymore. You have to use other means. And what they call these is proxies, right? Now, there are quite a few different types of proxies, but two of the main ones, which I'll talk about, are ice core and tree rings, okay? Now, ice core measurements, and this is quite an interesting thing, and it's good to understand it, right? Because ice cores are one of the most important, and they're often cited, because they go back, you can go back close to a million years using the ice core measurements. So it gives you a really good long-term perspective. How does the ice core measurement of temperature work? Well, it's all because the water molecule is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. Now, hydrogen and oxygen have different, what are called isotopes of the element. An isotope is an element which has the same atomic number, but a different atomic mass to other members of its group. And the reason it has different atomic mass is because it has a different number of neutrons. This is at least the theory of what isotopes are. So
the half-life.
Well, in radioactive elements, they have a half-life, but here we're actually just talking about stable elements. Stable elements have isotopes as well. We tend to think of isotopes as something just to do with radioactivity. It's not. Many standard stable elements, which are not radioactive, have isotopes. It just means that they have a different molecular mass, a different atomic mass, because they've got different number of neutrons in it. So why is that important? Well, when it's all to do with the way water condenses, and when water condenses into ice, because water goes from a vapor state to a liquid state and to an ice state, but it can go straight from a vapor state to an ice state. That's what happens when it snows. Okay. Now, when water condenses into snowflakes, the isotopes of the water molecules, the heavier isotopes condense more quickly than the lighter isotopes. And what that means in practice is that the colder it gets, the more heavier water molecules will be in your snow sample.
Right.
And that is exactly, literally, how they measure ancient temperature, is that they do the core sample. The core sample has regular annual lines, okay, segments. There's a word that my brain's not giving me. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. You following me? Hopefully, if you're following me, hopefully the audience is as well.
Yeah.
You know, regular sedimentary deposits, okay, and they're annual. Like, you can see the line each year because there's a melt and a freeze that occurs each year. So you can actually see the annual deposits in the ice sample. So you can.
Yeah, it's very similar to the tree ring principle.
Well, yeah, it's a lot similar. And what you do is you can count the number of years just by counting the number of deposits. And you can then take a sample of the snow from a particular year, and you can analyze it chemically to find its isotope count. And the more heavy isotopes, the colder it was at that time. It's that simple. And there's a straight way of mapping it that they've worked out so that they can tell, you know, there's a margin of error there. There's probably quite a big margin of error, but they can still tell relatively how cold it was. It's a brilliant technique. You know, that's science. That's real science. It's amazing. Okay. There are two main ice core sample sets that are often referred to. One is called the Greenland sample, and the other is called the Vostok sample, which is from Antarctica.
Yeah.
The Greenland ice cores demonstrate very clearly a medieval warming period. It's very, very clear. Now, what I also know is that and because I've done some more research, and there are teams that have studied the Greenland ice cores, and they've also done research using other proxy measurements, including tree ring measurements, pollen measurements, and quite a few other techniques that I'm not totally up to speed with. But these research teams, these proper, you know, scientific research teams, have come to the conclusion that the medieval warming period was a global phenomenon. That, and they, you know, I can cite a documentary where that is actually articulated, that this was present around the globe. Now, and I'm still exploring this topic as well, because I'm not quite sure where the claim that the medieval warming period was a localized phenomenon comes from. But I do know this, is that the Antarctic ice cores have a totally different picture to the Greenland ice cores. The Antarctic ice cores do not show a medieval warming period. And I suspect that that is where the global warming lobby gets its argument that the medieval warming period was a localized phenomena. But that's a contentious statement. There is other research which has been more exhaustive, which is research data from other parts of the world. And I'll just point out another thing. Antarctica, as a continent, is a very isolated and unique climatic zone of the planet. And it's hardly surprising that the patterns there would be different to what you see in the rest of the world. I mean, Antarctica, for a start, its winter temperatures are much, much colder than the North Pole.
Yeah.
Because it's a landlocked continent. It's a solid continent with massive amounts of ice on it. It's not really comparable to the North Pole. I mean, the North Pole has a sheet of ice on top of water. Antarctica is a giant continent with mountains, right? Mm. Which has like kilometers and kilometers of snow on it. Well, to me, and this is I'm not offering this as a scientific hypothesis, although it might be, but the Antarctic climate data for temperature variation is quite likely not going to match other parts of the world. And it makes sense to me that would be a localized phenomenon.
Yeah.
Who knows? And I mean, I want to find out more about this, and I'm basically just filling you in on my research that I'm doing. But I'm encouraging our listeners to do the same, you know, because we have to do it. We have to do it. We've got to find these things out.
And we don't know. We don't know hardly anything. I mean, we're that's why we call it truth news. We're trying to find the truth in all the spin and deception, and that's where looking at the raw data. That's why, you know, getting investing in some toothpicks that you can stick and wedge your eyelids open, because reading some of these dry data sheets gets pretty tiring. But it's so important. If you're going to go out there and you're going to campaign for something as important as climate change, in both pro and against the concept of anthropogenic climate change, then you have to be learned and really learned, not just parrot.
Yeah, you have to be a scientist in the Renaissance sense. This is not about having a degree. It's not about having a career. I mean, the original scientists didn't have degrees and careers. They did it because they were passionate.
Yeah.
We have to be true scientists. And we can be.
And look, you don't need to go to town, but you need to read as much as you can about the dry stuff. And research and listen to both sides of the argument. You know, yeah, watch Al Gore's film, definitely. But also watch, you know, the other films like the Great Global Warming Swindle, or the what's the latest one that was on the Twitter feed?
There's quite a lot of stuff on the Twitter feed, and I recommend go to the Twitter feed. We'll also put some links that I've referred to in tonight's show. Unfortunately, we've run over time, and I'm going to have to wind the show up, because if I don't wind the show up at a reasonable time, I get overtired and I can't keep doing the show. So I have to pace myself.
Fantastic. Well, another great week, folks. Please log on, give us some comments, give us some feedback. If you don't agree with something, especially write it up there, because we always want to be corrected. If we're saying something wrong, extremely important for the future of civilization that people correct each other and have civilized conversations.
Yeah, I really look forward to it. Bring it on. Bring on the civil conversation.
Thank you very much,
Great. Robert. Great. Well, thanks, Josh, and thanks, Australia, and the world, and the free internet. May it remain forever free.
Yeah, an email, Senator Conroy, with your disappointments.
Indeed. Good night from Truth News.
Good night.